Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream, you could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's mightiest heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast. The podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith. Trust.
Well, if it isn't the Star Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Hey there, Neverlanders. Take your pixie out of your pocket, sprinkle some pixie dust around, and grab your happiest thoughts so that you can fly away with me, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy, as we go away to Neverland once again. And we're bringing special friends with us. Hey, do y'all remember Trenton Larkin? He's been on here a couple of times. He's the host of Who Did That Voice, where he gets a really good in-depth look at voiceover, not just with the actors, but with the industry itself. You're going to learn a lot listening to his show. And Trenton is here with us to fly to Neverland. Hi, Trenton.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, we're flying right now over the unnamed ocean as to our island here at Neverland. And as we come in for a landing, we've got all kinds of fun stuff we're doing today. We've got some interesting news from around the world of Disney. We've also got a fun time. We're going to go through a movie review of a movie that I was like, gee, do I want to watch this? Do I not want to watch this? But you went to go see Power Rangers, so we'll be able to talk about that. And then I've also spent some time talking to the creators. If you've looked on Netflix, there's a documentary called An Animated Life of Floyd Norman, who was the first African-American animator at the Walt Disney Studios. And I've got Eric Sharkey and Michael Fiore, or Fiore, I haven't figured out which yet. But they came to talk about the documentary, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And we've got a lot to do, so we might as well get to some news.
Spanning the Disney and geek universe to bring you the best in comics, toys, movies, and entertainment. This is news from around Neverland.
Alrighty, well, the first thing now, you know, the Planet Hollywood Observatory had already opened. I've even heard that. I don't know if you listen to WDW Radio.
I do sometimes, yeah, from time to time when I have some time, which is not always.
But I already heard Lou Mangello take his family into the Planet Hollywood Observatory and review the restaurant. And then I saw that they did a grand opening later, which I guess is a typical thing. But they actually had Reese Witherspoon on hand to open this up.
Wow.
And this, you know, I've never eaten in a Planet Hollywood before. But, if I was going to eat at one, this would be the one to go to there at Disney Springs.
Yeah, I ate at a Planet Hollywood in New York back in like 2006, and they are really unique, but I'm sure that one would be extra special.
Yeah, I would hope so. Well, Disneyland's Autopia has been there I think it was a park opening attraction, if memory serves. And the listeners will be familiar with the Midget Autopia that Walt Disney actually gave to his hometown of Marceline. So, I mean, this is a rich history to this ride. And here recently in 2016, the cars were repainted because they are now sponsored by Honda. And the cars have been updated with fuel-efficient Honda engines. They got badges. They got new tires. And they've also got the Advanced Step in Innovative Mobility humanoid robot and its new robotic dog, or robotic friend, Bird. I don't know why I called it a dog. Which, these characters are apparently on a road trip, and as you're on Autopia, now you can get a story of you see these two characters on a road trip.
Oh, wow.
And there's a few photos here on the blog, which are, you know, kind of funny, of Bird getting tangled in a tree from his parachute, and all different things, but... Golly, okay, you've been on Test Track before, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, it's educational,
yeah,
but it's almost like a big car commercial.
Yeah, it is, kind of, yeah, like you're in the commercial.
Yeah, that's what this looks like. You've got a robot who's, you know, it's basically a posed character with a big Honda label on it, and you're just seeing what he does. And this, I think, you know, they've had a few commercials with this robot or something.
Yeah, if you've seen any of the Honda commercials with the robot, he actually, like, brings, like, a tray of food to a person, and they're trying to get it to where he's, like, an autonomous helper and kind of an assistant. So I'm sure that's kind of what he is doing, kind of standing by that vehicle. And then the bird is rather actually cute. It's kind of unique looking. I'm sure it's just for the ride itself, but the robot itself is an actual working robot that they're... I think they even sent one to space with NASA, I think.
Cool.
But I don't remember. But yeah, that's really cool that they're kind of revamping that and taking that classic ride to a new level. So
yeah, except for they've turned it into a giant commercial. Now, I understand you've got a Honda, you know, sponsor, and you're just kind of keeping things going so that you can keep updating it, but this just seems too much to me. I don't know. That's just with how my head works. Having some Honda stuff and maybe some Honda technology can learn about in the cars and fuel efficiency, that would be cool. But having this much in the park, I don't know.
You have to understand, to keep things going, sometimes you need funding. You know, even for anything you do, any project you do, even a podcast needs funding, you know, and, right. You know, we both know that from our experiences. But, you know, I mean, if a sponsorship comes in and says, hey, we're going to give you X number of millions or billions of dollars to do this, they would be stupid not to take the money because, you know, think of the disrepair the ride could have been in. Disney could have been considering to completely remove it altogether. And then Honda comes in and says, look, we want to give you enough funding to reboot it, but we want to put a spin on it that helps it tell a new story but keeps the old alive as well, you know.
Yeah, but this almost makes me think of one of my complaints about the modern Pirates of the Caribbean is just too much Johnny Depp, and this looks like it's too much Honda. Well, it should be just enough to where you're educated about the products without feeling like you're driving through a commercial.
But at the same time, if you ride the carousel of progress, Disney's always been about progress. Even
that's true.
From the very beginning, and always been about the future with Epcot. So you have to consider, this is futuristic technology. This is something that's kind of predicting. I mean, the vehicle is very non-today. It's very futuristic. The robot's futuristic. The bird's futuristic. And you have to think, GE and a lot of other companies have featured
Kodak rides.
Yeah, a lot of different, Kodak, different rides at, Epcot and those things. So, you know, outside, even Test Track says, you know, sponsored by, I think it's Chevrolet now. They change it all the time. But so there's sponsors all the time. And as to how much influence they have on the ride, I can understand that it might kind of seem like an overabundance. But at the same time, they have to have sponsorships to keep things motivated and going and changing all the time, because Disney itself can't bring in all the money, because they're opening new parks all the time and expanding new rides. So there's money that they expend, and then they have to have other funders come in to sponsor things sometimes. So
if you all get a chance to go to Disneyland and ride this new Autopia, let us know what you thought of these new additions. Does it add to the fun and the experience of the ride? Do you feel like you've learned something about some of the new technology? Or did it seem like, wow, this is a lot of Honda? let us know what you think when you actually ride it, because I've actually never been on the thing myself at all. So you probably already heard about this. Orlando in the Magic Kingdom is getting a brand new fireworks show that starts May 14th.
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's called Happily Ever After. They have a country star, which I forgot her name. But they're singing it, and the main thing is I just want to share this audio preview of some... It's a video that they actually have put up. If you go to the Disney Parks YouTube channel, you can watch these two singing it. But here's a little sample of some of the music. All right, now here, this is kind of cool. So 25 years ago, do you remember where you were when you heard about, it was called, let's see, what was it, Euro Disney at the time?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah, when it first came out, when they were first announcing it, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember it was open, and I remember being in high school, and, you know, it had that initial success, you know, that usually these new parks, sometimes in these foreign lands, they do have a big boost in sales, and then it kind of tapers off, and, you know, and some people called it a bit of a failure. In fact, I had a friend of mine in high school, we were doing a thing in drama, and we made kind of a joke on Jurassic Park of a failed theme park, and, oh, yeah, we're going to Euro Disney. But Disneyland Paris has survived for 25 years and is still there, and they, oh my goodness, they got all kinds of stuff going on, and it is one of my goals to get over there just because the castle is beautiful. Terry Harden has created this dragon that's animated down below it that I really want to see in person. I mean, there is so much cool stuff going on over there, but they're adding some new things. Wow. And this is starting on Sunday, March 26th, so by the time you're hearing this, it's probably already started. So if you're going to Paris, go check it out. But at Star Tours, the adventure continues. This is pretty much getting them updated now with some new adventures, kind of like what they already have here in the States. They're also going to give you a chance to meet Darth Vader in a Meet the Dark Side of the Force over by the Star Tours Adventure Continues ride. Private meet and greet. The Disney Stars on Parade is going to be adding some new floats and a whole bunch of new Disney Stars costumes, all kinds of fun stuff. There's going to be a Mickey Presents Happy Anniversary Disneyland Paris stage show specifically going on in front of Sleeping Beauty Castle. The Starlet Princess Waltz, which is another brand new show, which is going to have like Tinkerbell and Ariel and Belle and Snow White and Cinderella and just anybody you want to see. And then as night falls, Disney Illuminations, which is going to be a wonder, of course, state-of-the-art. I mean, of course, it's state-of-the-art. It's Disney making one of these shows. It's going to be high-tech. And then later this spring, they're going to get Star Wars Hyperspace Mountain. So this is some things that we've kind of seen here in the States, but they haven't done it in Paris. And I think this is really part of that boost. We're looking at... We talked, I guess it's been about a month, about Disney kind of buying more of the actual park itself, because Disney will sometimes contract out with these parks and have other companies run these outside parks for them, but Disney has taken an upper hand and been buying all of the shares up for Disneyland Paris, and this seems to be a big move in sprucing up that park and making it as awesome as it could possibly be. So I really would love to fly over to Paris and check it all out, but I'm a poor podcaster and college student. I'm not going to make it.
Well, when you're talking about where were you back when Disney Euro was announced, I was like, well, I was 6 years old at the time, so...
Wow, I'm old.
I was like, wow, that was forever ago. I didn't even realize they've been open that long. I feel really old now. I'm like, wow, 25 years and I haven't made
it. Wow. You feel old, huh?
Yeah.
I was in high school.
Well, you're like, do you remember when they announced it? I'm like, yeah, I probably vaguely saw a commercial and didn't care at all because I was 6 years old at the time. Just Disney, cool, whatever. But as far as the, you mentioned something about Star Wars Hyperspace Mountain. I originally remember they were doing that for a limited time only, but have they officially like made that the name of the ride now, especially in Florida, or...
Well, I don't believe Florida has ever gotten it, because Florida being that it's more the tourist park, they like to keep everything as is so that people who come into town get to see it as the same experience as everyone else. But in Disneyland, that's where they'll take the Haunted Mansion and spruce it up for the holidays, and that's also where they've turned Space Mountain into Hyperspace Mountain, which they did for a limited time, and then they turned it back to the regular, but I have heard that they've turned it back into Hyperspace Mountain because it's been so popular that people are enjoying it, and Star Wars is big right now. Wow. like it always is, really.
Yeah.
But that, I have heard that they've gone back. I'm sure it's going to go back and forth. They'll probably find a good season to switch it back and forth over at Disneyland. And Paris, I'm sure it'll do the same thing. They'll go back and forth and have it a seasonal fun thing of like, it's time to go Star Wars. Now it's time to be normal. Now it's time to be Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know. Either way, it's I got to see it. You know, I haven't gotten to ride it. Eric has told me about it. It sounds fantastic. So, especially it's Star Wars fans, so you got to go.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, but there's something to do stateside. And if somebody is feeling generous with my birthday coming up, because my birthday is May 26th, and this is the big 4-0 this year, and I've been looking for something really big to do. But at Disney's Hollywood Studios, if somebody would just love to pay my airfare and my ticket to get in, the music of Pixar Live is beginning on May 26th in Disney's Hollywood Studios, and this is limited. They're going to play music from all of the Pixar films, including all the Cars movies, the Toy Story movies, and all that, and it's going to be on the stage where normally they've had that Beauty and the Beast stage show running forever, but they're going to do this. It's a music of Pixar Live!
Oh, nice.
This just sounds so cool. So I would love to go. So if somebody wants to get me a really awesome birthday present, you would be my favorite Neverland fan of all time. Never going to happen. But, you know, hey.
That's funny.
And speaking of Orlando, here's something else that I want to go to that I'll never probably ever get to. Star Wars Celebration, and they have released a schedule of all the different panels and events going on different floors. There's a 40th anniversary celebration, because conveniently, Star Wars originally was released the day before I was born, so we both get to turn 40 together. And this is going to feature, like, Billy Dee Williams is going to be the head of the panel, which I've seen him in a panel. I still have to share that audio. Ian McDiarmid and Ray Park, which... it is one of my goals to see Ray Park, because anything I've seen him on the panel, he is just the coolest thing. There's, of course, going to be a stage for Star Wars The Last Jedi, which you better believe I will be paying attention to bring you any information that I can about the upcoming film. There's also going to be small talk, ha-ha, with Warwick Davis. A sneak peek of Star Wars Rebels 4. Anthony Daniels have talked about being 40 years as C-3PO. Cosplay, a bunch of voices for The Smuggler's Revenge, lots of stuff going on. If you go to StarWars.com in their news area, you can find this entire schedule for the celebration. So if you're planning on go, you better plan on what panels you want to hit, because it's going to be a crowded mess, and you better be in line for all this stuff, because otherwise you probably will not get in.
Yeah, it's going to be an amazing event, and I know that the 4-day tickets have already sold out like 4 or 5 months ago, so if you're going, you're only going to be able to buy day tickets at a time, which is going to be more expensive, but that's unfortunately the only option they have right now.
Now, if somebody would like to smuggle me into the thing in a suitcase, or perhaps let me pretend to be Yoda on your backpack as you're dressed as Luke Skywalker, I only weigh 226 pounds. You can certainly carry me. Plus, I'm losing weight. So, you know, by the time it's there, I might be down to, you know, 200.
Or so, you can just get a press pass and go in.
That would be cool, but I still have to get to Orlando. So you still have to smuggle me in your suitcase. So, you know, let's talk. We'll set something up. We'll do lunch. A salad lunch, but we'll do lunch.
Funny.
And speaking of Star Wars, this is something I've just seen pop up, and I'm still kind of I don't know what to think about it.
Yeah.
Completely. Well, I got some ideas of it, but Bob Iger was at some sort of a press thing and mentioned that in the upcoming Han Solo standalone film, which is, it's a solo film, get it? I'm good. These are the jokes, folks. These are the jokes. You get what you pay for when it's a free podcast, right? But Bob Iger said that we're going to learn Han Solo's real name.
Yeah, I don't like that at all, remotely.
Yeah, I think hashtag Han shot first is going to become hashtag Han is his name.
I don't know.
Hopefully they changed that idea. Or maybe Iger was said something and we just didn't understand exactly what he meant. Like that he's got some sort of a other name, or how he earned the name as being the best smuggler or something. Or maybe what Chewbacca actually calls him.
Yeah, maybe it's a code name or something. I don't know. Because in some of the stories, they say that Han was actually a stormtrooper at one point in time.
Right. He was an Imperial officer, so maybe he's had to change his name to hide the fact that he was once with the Empire.
Which, that could make sense, and if they tell the story right, and I like the concept that they do, I'll go with it. But otherwise, he's always Han Solo to me, and I don't care what Disney tries to do to change the legacy of Han Solo's name, but... It could have been like a witness protection program in outer space, and they changed it to Han Solo to hide his identity. Who knows?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it witness protection. I would say it's more, I'm going into the criminal underground, and I need a new name.
Not like Darth Vader couldn't read his mind and know that the guy that was delivering equipment to the Empire wasn't previously working for them. I mean, like, they're not stupid, but
yeah,
we'll see.
Darth Vader can't even recognize a droid that he built himself.
That's true. That's true.
Or even the astromech that he used to run around with,
Yeah, sometimes the correlations between the films is kind of interesting. Like, the way that Rogue One ended with Darth Vader just being all out awesome with his lightsaber, killing people and choking people and taking their weapons. And then, like, you look at A New Hope and you're like, wow, there's nothing compared to what they already did. So it's like, those don't even match up, but they match up by the way they edited the movies. But I don't know. It's interesting. But I like that Darth Vader's more agile and stuff, but it doesn't explain why 2 seconds later he's just walking around doing nothing,
Well, he's let his stormtroopers take the job. But, it does, and somebody took the liberty of showing the last scene and then editing straight into the opening of A New Hope. And you
I saw
get
that.
To see. Yeah, yeah, with the door starts going, now you got to be thinking, these troops might be thinking, oh my gosh, I hope Darth Vader's not about to come through that door.
Yeah, but sometimes the correlations don't make sense because they're like, we're on a diplomatic mission, but like if in Rogue One, you see the ship leave and Darth Vader sees that ship leave.
Yeah.
And so sometimes the things that they say in A New Hope, I don't feel they correlate with how they ended Rogue One, because it's like, it's not just some random vessel. And I think they even say, transmissions were transmitted to this vessel.
Yeah, or beamed aboard this ship.
Or beamed aboard the ship, but they physically handed the plans from one guy to another, and it's like, how a lot of that doesn't make sense to me anymore. But
yeah, the way I figure, because it was beamed to the ship that the Tantive or Tantive went from, so Vader, all he knows is, okay, it was beamed here and it's connected with this ship. And if you were on that ship and Darth Vader's going, it's like, hey, we know that you've got this, of course you're gonna lie your teeth out. we're on a diplomatic mission. We've even got a senator on board. We don't know what you're talking about. And that's, of course, why Vader is probably getting even more angry, because, like, I watched it happen, okay? You were right there. I nearly had you. Don't lie to me. Choke and die, It adds something to it, because you're like, you can see they're, because clearly they were lying through their teeth anyway. But now it makes it even more intense, and you can feel Vader's anger and frustration at nearly having everybody and having the plans back in his hands and them getting away from him, and then it catches up to him and they're lying to him. It's like, excuse me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it does kind of give you a different perspective on things. But you do have to make those leaps in your head of like, but wait a minute, what do you mean beam aboard? I guess maybe he meant this ship. And yeah, stuff like you're talking about, where it doesn't always fit.
Yeah, it doesn't.
But we go with it because we love it.
Yeah, we do. We do.
Yep. Oh, and now this is awesome, and you're going to have to take a look to see if this is coming to you, but they are in a big promotion for Cars 3. They're going to have the life-size versions of, like, Lightning McQueen and some of the other characters going on a tour across the country, and I did see that May 24th, they're going to be here in Kansas City at Union Station. That is on a Wednesday of all weirdness of days. I am planning to go, and I will get some photos and whatever I'm allowed to get to bring back to you. But if you go to ohmy.disney.com, you should be able to find this. This news just broke here on the 21st. So go look up for Cars 3. Find out if they're coming to you. There is a PDF file that you can download that has a schedule of all their locations. Even if you're not a Cars fan, really, if you're thinking, the first one was cool, the second one was terrible, and whatever. You've got to be excited, at least for Cars 3. What we've seen does look really cool. And it's still a Disney event, and it's still going to be fun. And your kids are going to love it. Even if you're a 40-year-old kid, which I will be nearly 40 at the time. And I'm going to have fun with it. I'm not even an Asgard fan. I just think it'll be awesome.
Yeah, I think so too. I think from the previews I've seen of Cars 3, it's come a long way from Cars 1, and I'm really excited to see it. So,
yes, a slightly darker feel perhaps, and wow,
yeah,
scary. We'll see. But okay, I saw this a while back, and this is pretty cool. Because there used to be a comic strip in newspapers that was Muppets.
Really?
Yeah, and I've gotten to see some of it. One of the artists of it had lend some of his art to the museum up there in Marceline. I don't know if it was this still up there when we were there in September?
I don't recall it, no.
Because I think he took some of it with it. Guy Gilchrist, though, was one of the artists. But Marvel has announced a Muppets Omnibus Collection where they're going to collect all of these comic strips and release it.
Oh, wow.
Now, I should have looked at exactly when this is coming out. I just saw this and was excited, like, oh my gosh, a Muppets comic. So,
so that's funny.
I'm gonna keep my eyes open, and I will of course be getting myself a copy because I have to.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, it's time to spend a little bit of time in the trailer park.
All right, y'all. One more time. It don't matter what you look like. It don't. Nobody gonna sing with me. Okay.
The Neverland Trailer Park.
Yeah. We have to be ready. You, me, the others. There's an attack coming from far away.
Not coming, Bruce. It's already here. The others. Where are they?
Arthur Curry. The Aquaman. It's on him.
Organic and biomechatronic body parts. He's a cyborg.
You should probably move. Barry Allen.
Whoever you're looking for, it's not me. You're the Batman?
They said the Age of Heroes would never come again.
It has to.
Superpowers again?
I'm rich.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
My turn.
Come together. Right now. Come together. Right now.
Shall we?
It's good to see you playing well with others again.
Just like a bat. I dig it.
Maybe temporary.
Yeah!
All right, so the moment we were waiting for, and I was actually sitting on YouTube this morning just waiting for this to drop because they've been teasing it all week. A Justice League trailer has finally been released to show us everything. And the first thing I instantly thought is, you know, one of the things with the DC heroes, whenever they've come in contact with Marvel and they have the crossover, the DC heroes will always mock the Marvel heroes for, you know, your cities are dirty and gritty and all this stuff. There's something wrong here when, like, in DC, we are looked up and held up to high esteem and we are icons. You know, Superman is, like, held in high regard and stuff, and it's a completely different world. But then you watch this trailer, and it is dark. My goodness, dark.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm dying to, so I'm sure I'll check it out after this. But
well, that was the first thing that went through my head, and it really didn't give anything of a plot other than, oh, well, there's something that threatens the world, so Bruce Wayne has been putting together a Justice League. And they, you know, show a lot of action sequences and a little bit of humor there at the end.
I actually am not excited from this. I was thinking, oh, this could be cool, but I don't know. Something when I watched it, I was a little bit like, meh.
Yeah,
I've seen this before. It was called The Avengers, and I loved it. And The Avengers, and you know, Philip and I were actually just talking about this week, that the great thing about the Marvel films and The Avengers is they went for it. It's bright, it's colorful, it's fun, it's aliens and superheroes, and they did it in a way where it's believable, but we were able to go with it. And it completely looks different from what DC is trying to do with just dark, gritty, and just, I don't know, it doesn't. For Justice League, I can't see it being this dark, gritty type of thing. If that were just Batman by himself, okay. But this is the Justice League. This is the Flash and Wonder Woman. And
in my opinion, the shows they do on the CW are way better, with Arrow and Flash and Supergirl. Those have that same kind of Marvel feel where they're lighter, they're brighter, they're more exciting, they're more vibrant. People love these characters. And so for them to turn around and recast most of the Justice League they've already established on the CW, I didn't understand why we were recasting all these people for the big screen, you know, and making a whole nother team of Justice League when they've already created the Justice Society and everything like in the CW. And they said they wanted to keep the world separate, where like Marvel has done all their TV shows and they all connect to the movies some way or another. And, you know, Marvel got in the game early, and Justice League was supposed to release like 10 years ago with a whole nother cast, and it tanked. Yeah. And, you know, I think they missed the bus by like 15 years. It hadn't been that long, but it's been about 10 years. And they've just, I think they missed the boat, and they've wanted to go for this nittier, grittier, darker tone, which DC comics are a lot darker, but I don't think it's appealing to people like they wanted it to, because they went in a totally opposite direction from Marvel to be different. But I think it was not good for them. Now, the Wonder Woman previews I've seen look amazing, but I wasn't impressed with the Batman v Superman. I don't think I'll be impressed with the Justice League trailer from what you've said and from the little sneaks that I've seen of it. It's just, I don't like how they're going with it, because even the Christian Bale Batmans to me were too real. They were so real that there was no fantasy to be like, oh, this could happen. It was like, yeah, there's robbers and they're wearing masks. Cool. But there was no awesome, like, oh, wow, like Gotham on Fox. That's an amazing show, you know, but Christopher Nolan and them, they just wanted to make it so real. I think it kind of kills it for me. So,
yeah, you got to remember your source material is still comic books.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not real.
Yeah, Marvel Studios has done this the right way, with saying, you know what, we can do the fantastic. But if you make your characters grounded enough and believable, people will go with it. If the characters seem real enough in themselves,
yeah.
Which has been something Marvel's always been good at, is they had ordinary style people that were in these fantastic situations. And so when you put in a movie, suddenly you can have these ordinary, regular, relatable people and put them in fantastic situations, and the audience gets to go in that fantastic situation with them and love every minute of it. So yeah, nice try, Warner Brothers, but all you DC fans can get mad at me all you want, but I make mine Marvel. I'm loving the Marvel movies and DC Universe. A dark Superman is where you drop the ball.
Yeah.
As soon as you darken Superman, you have lost your biggest icon in DC. Superman should never be dark. Batman can be dark. Superman should never be dark.
And I'm going to make one more comment and I'll be done with this, but I think the DC Universe does way better on television, because the TV shows have always been amazing, starting with Smallville. I loved Smallville. I loved the tone they had for Superman growing up and in becoming Superman. And then all of the new shows with Arrow and Supergirl and Flash and everything. But I think when it comes to feature films, Marvel has that patent down, and CW or DC has it down when it comes to TV shows, but they can't make a movie worth anything of late, from in my opinion. So
yeah, and so it has been said, and so it is law, because you are right. Well, at least I'm going to agree with your opinion and my opinion. And so if people want to disagree with us, they're wrong. No, I'm kidding.
And DC makes fantastic animated films. Like, their animated movies are killer. Like, they should stick to what they do best, because it comes to feature films, they don't do very well, but their animated feature films and their live action TV shows are stellar. So I don't understand why their feature films are suffering so much. But
well, because they're just not Marvel. Okay, but I'm kidding, y'all, kidding. Okay, but it's time to go for a movie review.
There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Be a movie!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody and me.
When I was
how are you people seeing this for the first time?
Hermit, I got a great picture of the chicken.
Oh, good.
Alrighty, now I remember, golly, what was it? Probably, it was right around the time of Jurassic Park was out. So this would have been, it was either 1992 or 1993. I remember when Mighty Morphin Power Rangers debuted on a Saturday morning, and I watched it, and I thought, wow, look, it's Voltron mixed with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles mixed with Jurassic Park. Of course kids are going to love it. But I was like, this is the campiest, cheesiest, dopiest thing since Adam West put on a bat suit, which I still love the old 66 Batman. And I was not into it at all. But there's a new movie, and you grew up with Power Rangers, so you were the perfect age for it. I was probably just too old for it, and so you were a fan.
Oh, yeah. I've watched every episode. I'm an avid follower of the show. I don't necessarily like some of the newer seasons as much, but I follow it because it's a history, you know, and it kind of builds on itself sometimes. When Disney had it, they kind of went a different direction with the show for a while, but Saban's kind of brought it back to its origins. And this new feature film was just amazing. I got to see it 2 days before it released to the general public, and it was amazing.
Yeah, the only real connection I guess I would have is, and I recently played the audio where Austin St. John, who was the original Red Ranger, was at a convention. And he himself, he is an awesome guy and has done a lot of, you know, been a fireman. He was a military medic, served overseas. I mean, that guy is awesome. And I don't know who these Rangers are, but I don't know if they can be as awesome as some of what the actors have done. We'll just say that. Because even the guy who, the long-haired guy, he's got like a Christian MMA thing that he does. I'm like, hey, that's cool too.
So Jason David Frank.
Yeah, he can seriously kick your butt if you wanted to, but he's a nice guy, so he won't.
Yeah,
unless you cross him.
he is an awesome guy. I haven't personally gotten to talk with him, but I follow his Facebook, and Jason David Frank is a huge fan of mine I'm a huge fan of his.
Well, he's a fan of you, we know.
Yeah, but you know, because he was Tommy the Green Ranger and then became White Ranger, and the new feature film was just, I was very skeptical going in. I even told my wife, I'm not going to like this. It's going to be horrible. Everything I had seen preview-wise didn't give me a hint of anything remotely worth even going to see it. But since I had free movie passes to a screening, I was like, I'm not spending any money on this, so I won't miss anything because it's not going to be any good. And when we saw the movie, my wife even loved it. And she likes geeky stuff like me, but not to the extent that I do. And when she came out of there, she said, I love this movie. And I was like, wow, really? Because I did too. It blew my mind out of the water. It was different. It's a reimagining, but it's action packed. It's funny. There's modern day humor. You know, people go, it's not the same as Power Rangers. Well, it came out in 93, the dress, the period of the hairstyles, the period of the outfits, they didn't have cell phones. I mean, there's so much that was different back then. And yes, it's iconic because it was done almost 25 years ago, and it's cemented in cement. You know, it's amazing because it is what it is, and it was original, and it was the first time. And the series used to run like 60, 70 episodes a season, and now they run like 18 or 20 and they're done. And so we really got to know the original Rangers. We knew who they were inside and out for the most part. But in this new movie, we actually learned stuff about the characters because it is the original Jason and Kimberly and Trini and Billy and Zach. And we learn more about who those people are on a more personal level. And they crack jokes that are more up to date. And Krispy Kreme's in the movie, and it's super funny. It was really well done. It is a little campy, but it is up to date. And it's not as campy as the TV show, but it's a reimagining, and it's amazing. I highly recommend it to everyone, Ranger fan alike or non-Ranger fan alike. It's a great date night movie, great kid movie, good for all ages. So I highly recommend it.
So, of course, there would have to be a little bit of campy to keep it in league with what the series is like. But overall, just a lot of fun then, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun, but it is modernized, you know. So, I think this universe is going to be separate from the TV show.
Yeah, clearly.
But they have a 6-movie story arc. Lionsgate's already planned out.
My goodness.
And if you're a fan of Power Rangers, if you know the original series, they're going to talk about stuff that correlates back to your childhood. And you're going to hear it, and it's going to make you laugh and cheer and be happy because they do a lot of throwback to the fans, but they also do a lot of new stuff for people who might not have ever seen Power Rangers.
Now the CG, it looked really bad, at least to me, on the commercials. Does it look a lot better on a bigger screen?
It looks really good on the movie screen. There are some times where it can seem maybe a little off, but it's not very much so, because the CG technology has gotten so amazing, it's really hard almost to distinguish the reality from the artificial now.
Yeah, well, that's good, because I would want to believe that there's a giant Zord thing walking around in whatever the town is. I forget the name of
Angel Grove. Yeah,
Angel Grove. Yeah, which is very strange to me when I saw in the trailer that they've got them in a school for juvenile delinquents. I'm like, what? So,
well, it's detention, which there were some episodes or one episode where they all got to go to detention, and then there were these like other rangers that were actually putties in disguise, and they were causing trouble in the school. So a lot of what they do in this movie is a throwback to segments of episodes from the original series, and they took it and they combined everything from three seasons and made it into a movie. It was fantastic. It was really wonderful. Wow. So
do we get a chance of the big, what is it, Zed? Was the big Lord Zed, who was actually kind of a cool looking character, who was like a secondary villain. He came in after, I guess, they were done with Rita or something.
Rita was the only main villain that was really introduced, but she does tell us that more people will come to Earth to destroy the Power Rangers. So who knows what's coming next?
Did I actually get the name right? It was Lord Zed or something? It was this big red guy that was kind of cool looking.
Lord Zed came in like season two and a half, like season two midway or season three. So he may come in the future. I think they're keeping to the origins of what people already know, but the stories were being told a little bit differently so that it's not the same old hat that you've heard before.
And what'd they do about putties? Did they find a way to make them actually threatening instead of weird gray guys going?
They are kind of like rock creatures, and they're made from whatever's around, the roads, pavement, rocks, whatever. So they're not really putties made from putty like they were in the TV show. I think they still call them putties. I think I remember that, but they're actually more of like a rock creature. So it's a little bit different, but they're more menacing and more powerful, more strong, and kind of ominous and big and bulky. So yeah, kind of just, you know, the big thug villain, you know.
Oh, good. Because that's one of the things that the series, anytime I watch it, it's like your villains don't seem like a threat.
Yeah.
And if your villain isn't scary or threatening enough, then I don't care about your heroes. And the putties were, which is ridiculous to me. But, you know, making them out of rock and stuff like that, that sounds a lot better, because now you got like, you know, they like Krang Stone Warriors and Ninja Turtles. Like, oh, these guys are made out of rock, so of course they're going to be tough. And so,
yeah.
All right. That definitely sounds like improvement. I'll probably get out to it, but my list of priorities, I still haven't gotten to see Kong Skull Island yet. So I got to see that one. That one looks awesome
for sure. So.
But I had to drop everything for Beauty and the Beast last week. But thanks for coming on and telling us about some Power Rangers and that movie, because I knew somebody needed to cover it, and I wasn't sure I was going to.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm glad I was able to share, and I hope people go see it and let us know what they think about it.
And, hey, y'all, go check out who did that voice, because if you're a Power Rangers fan, my goodness, because you've talked to I forgot the actor's name, though, who played the one guy. Yep.
I've had David Fielding, who played Zordon, and that's the original Zordon from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And then I've also had Kerrigan Mahan, who played Goldar, the original and only Goldar for me. And he also played, years later, he played Magna Defender, for those of you who know Power Rangers Lost Galaxy, and he was the Super Ranger in that series, which blew my mind, because when I interviewed him, I knew he was Goldar, but I didn't know he played a Super Ranger years later. So,
and he's got a cool voice.
He does. He does. He is super cool. Both episodes are super amazing, and I'm working on getting more Power Rangers and people from the original universe on my show as well. But I have a variety of things, from Barbie to the voice of Siri for iPhone, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you name it. So.
Yeah, so it's not just about the geek fandom of we love these characters. It's about a lot of the industry and these people who work in it, who do all kinds of different stuff. It's really kind of fun. So even though I'm not a Power Ranger fan, I will listen to the actors come on to his show, because it is interesting to hear their perspective of how they've got into the business.
Absolutely. So. And
it's a very, very cool show.
Just real quick. Thank you, Jeremy. I really appreciate it. And I wanted to let everyone know, this Friday coming up is my 50th episode. I can't believe it. And it is Mega Man from the 1990s, who also played Cheetor from Beast Wars and who was the original Goku on Dragon Ball.
Awesome.
Yeah, very much so. Ian James Corlett will be on the show this coming Friday. You won't want to miss it. And you can find me on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, all over the place. So
awesome.
to Disney and beyond.
All righty there, Neverlanders. We are now here with a couple of guys who made this really cool documentary that I actually just got through watching. But I'm here with Michael Fiore, or is that Fiore?
Fiore.
Fiore.
That's the Italian way.
It's the Italian way. So, and Eric Sharkey, not to be confused with Sharky the Shark Dog. But
exactly. It's a whole other Sharky.
But these two have made a really cool documentary about Disney legend Floyd Norman, if I can speak English. It's a wonderful thing. And, oh, my gosh, this was really cool. And I got to tell you, I was just watching a really good documentary last night called The Overnighters that turned into a very depressing documentary. So getting a chance to sit and watch this one today, Animated Life with Floyd Norman, was such a refreshing change.
That's good to hear. We're glad you got some laughs and smiles out of it.
If there's one thing Eric and I always talked about when we started to make the movie was, why is it that documentaries have become the genre of sadness? Like we wanted to do everything in our power to make, you know, a uplifting, funny, entertaining doc. So we're glad, based on your response, that we were able to do that.
Yeah,
yeah,
even
we need
has
more
a
people like you that are tired of all depressing documentaries all the time, you know.
Yeah, it even has a surprise happy ending that I didn't see coming. I was like, hooray! So, but I won't tell anybody because I don't want to spoil it.
Right. Well, we're glad you enjoyed it and left inspired. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was really great. So how did you two start making documentary films? Is that what you always wanted to do?
No, I mean, I started, my last film was a documentary. It was about a famous posterist named Drew Struzan, who did a lot of the Star Wars and Indiana Jones posters. He did the Back to the Future posters, and that was the first feature documentary that I had done. But before that, I did narrative stuff. I think it was just I loved Drew's art so much I wanted to do it, and just like with this one, it was a love for Floyd and his art, but I kind of fell into it.
And I've seen that, that Drew documentary. That's good. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I know I was going to, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was about to say, I came from a world of narrative as well. And my experience with documentaries leading into working with Eric on our Floyd Norman documentary was by making short docs that were a part of the bonus features that you would see on some sort of a notable feature, like The Wizard of Oz 75th anniversary, or an indie film from, you know, director Tom DiCillo, and things of that nature. So I had always loved docs, but, you know, finding the right person to focus on for a feature doc is not an easy task, because it has to, you know, have its fair amount of conflict, mm-hmm. humor, you know, it has to be very well-rounded. And so when I never worked with Eric before, but we had a mutual contact, our music composer, Ryan Shore, when I had heard of Eric through Ryan, because Ryan had scored the Drew Struzan documentary, I called Eric up and just said, what are you working on next? And he said, you know, I've got a few ideas. And one of the ideas that he pitched me was Floyd's story. And I was in total shock that nobody had made a feature on Floyd. And so at that moment, it was an absolute no-brainer. And Eric and I got together twice over the next month or so, had coffee, lunch, just kind of felt each other out to see if we could work together well. And then we decided to do it. So literally 4 to 5 weeks after the first day we talked, we were sitting with Floyd in his house in Pasadena.
Wow.
Yeah, we started shooting right away. Like the first couple days, we shot on the Disney lot with Floyd, which was really amazing because he walked us around the Disney lot and has just firsthand stories about working with Walt Disney and the nine old men who are the master animators, the first master animators that did Snow White and everything. So walking around with him there and having him share those stories and the film with him, and like Michael's saying, hanging out in his house and filming with him. He's got his Disney Legend Award right there in his house. It's fantastic.
Wow. So were you guys Disney fans beforehand, or did this just make you even bigger Disney fans? Or, well, I mean, I can imagine if I walked into that studio, I would just geek out all over the place.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for us, we both have our favorite Disney movies, and then when you're there with a guy like Floyd, there's like that pinch me moment when you're getting a personal tour of the Disney Animation Building, you know, passing Walt's original office. And the tour guide is Floyd. It's like, all right, you can pinch me because I need to know if I'm dreaming. Like, this is really special.
Yeah, I mean, and my favorite Disney movie as a kid was Jungle Book, and Floyd played such an important role in that movie. So I remember first time I even met him and talked to him, he casually brought up working with Walt Disney on the Jungle Book, and I was like, oh my God, that's my favorite Disney movie. So it's fantastic to learn about all these classic films through Floyd, who was actually there, who actually worked on like Sleeping Beauty and The Sword and the Stone and 101 Dalmatians, all these great classics. Yeah, I
must say I was kind of geeking out a little bit watching the documentary, which seeing, you know, him, especially when he's, you know, drawing some of the fairies from Sleeping Beauty, just like, I don't know if I remember how to draw this, but something like that. And I was like, oh my gosh, look, he's drawing it, you know.
And that was part of the intrigue for Eric and I, when we were kind of figuring out, you know, any filmmaker, any movie they work on, they kind of find the thing that excites them. And one of the things that excited us was the fact that there aren't many documentaries that pull back the curtain on the folks that made the Disney films. It's often that Walt Disney gets the attention, and you know that there's a lot of talented people, but to see individual stories is very rare. So that excited us. But then, like, again, once we were there filming at the lot, once we were there filming Floyd draw, we knew that this was like, it is so rare to see it in any form, whether it's a news piece or just a feature documentary. It's super rare. So that got us really excited, and we kind of knew people are going to respond to this.
Oh, yeah. Now, the difficult part must have been trying to figure out what to use and what not to use, because I can imagine you've got some footage there with all these Hanna-Barbera animators all sitting around there in this little diner, sitting there sharing stories. I'm like, oh my gosh, I could probably sit around these guys for hours and hear their stories. So how do you choose what you want to use in that?
Oh, that's hilarious, because they are so funny, those Hanna-Barbera guys. And I think we filmed them for like a couple hours, and they're just joke after joke, and then reminiscing and telling these stories. And then there's all the times you filmed with Floyd and all these amazing interviews that we had. So it is a mountain of footage, and it's quite a challenge to put that all together into a narrative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We started with a three-hour cut. And, you know, we knew it was going to, the goal originally was to get it to like 75 minutes to 80 minutes. We ended up at 94. And, you know, you sit there with this 3-hour cut that came out of over 100 plus hours of film footage, archival footage, you know, you've got everything under the sun. And it really is just a matter of like, what is the most interesting story that you can tell, or the one that's the most truthful to Floyd's story. And what we started to realize, you know, we started on the journey with Eric had a very unified view of saying, we want to tell a love story. It's about a man that loves his craft, a man that loves his family, and in particular, his wife and his ex-wife and his kids. And we maintained that throughout the entire process of making the movie. But what did change was kind of the dramatic hook. We went in thinking that the movie was going to be, in some ways, more about race and race relations in kind of a corporate arts. And really, on like the first or second day we were filming with Floyd, he deflated that immediately. And it's in the movie, it's in the trailer. He says, I didn't even know I was an African-American. I was just a guy that like wanted to do a job. And the minute he made it clear that race was never an issue for him, there was that moment where we were like, oh, wow, like what is the dramatic hook of the movie? But then as we got to know Floyd more and we talked to more people in his world, we realized that his forced retirement from Disney on his 65th birthday, in turn dealing with them ageism, was actually a bigger mountain to climb than dealing with racism. But that didn't, you know, really show itself to us for many, many months into the filming.
Yeah, and
Floyd, you know, expresses himself through art. So, you know, when he goes through hard times, he's not somebody to, like, really vocalize it. But what's great is all these amazing cartoons that he does that just, they're really biting, and he really calls everything out in these fantastic cartoons.
Yeah, the book you all showed there in the documentary, I would really like to get a copy of it, because some of the cartoons you showed where he was skewering something were hilarious. Because even though if you weren't in the situation, you understood exactly where he was coming from, and there is such a humor to it that it's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean,
a little satire, you know. He just because it's hard hitting stuff, but it's funny, and that's what's important. It's like it's with love, even if there's anger behind it, to make you laugh, and it's satirical.
Yeah. And that is definitely one of the attitudes that I did love about him is, well, you know, like you were just saying, where he didn't realize he was African American until somebody came in and told him. I love the way he's never let that be a factor. He just, you know, even on the clips from The View, he was an artist who wanted to work. He wanted to work at Disney, and he went and did it. And I love that. It's like, you know, why is people get hung up on race? Just get in there. Do what you love to do, and don't let people tell you no.
Yeah, and that, I think, when audiences, because obviously we did a theatrical run to qualify for the Oscars this year, and when we were in those audiences or at film festivals, a lot of times when we do Q&As, people would express how they were so, in some ways, I guess, happy that the movie wasn't about race. They were surprised in a very pleasant way. And it was like, oh, this is about something else. We didn't go down, in some ways, what would be the expected path. And again, that wasn't our choice. It was just Floyd has lived this life where, as you said, color wasn't an issue. It was, you know, persevere, don't take no for an answer, and, you know, ironically, ageism, which doesn't matter if you're, you know, white, brown, or in between. We are all going to get old, and someone at some point is going to say, based on a number on your birth certificate, that you're no longer worthy. So it's a very universal story, and what we're happy about is told in a way that's really fun and funny, and it's not a downer by any means. Like, you will leave watching the movie smiling.
Yep.
Floyd is really inspiring because, I mean, he is the first African-American artist at Disney, but like you were saying, he didn't set out to be that. He just had a passion. He loved animation. He loved drawing, and he had this passion to work for Disney, and he just followed it, and then he happened to be the first black artist. And then by putting up all these great gags all over the place, he happened to get discovered by Walt Disney and got promoted to the story department and got to work with him on Jungle Book. So he's definitely somebody who just thinks as an artist first. I want to pursue this. And in doing so, he became a trailblazer.
Yeah. And that's the thing. You know, if anyone ever tries to play the ageism card, you just show them a picture of Stan Lee. It's like, you know what? This guy hasn't stopped, and he's like 95.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's the crazy thing about the corporate arts that, you know, as Paul Dini, the famed writer, says in the movie, you know, he's very black and white about it. Animation's corporate art.
Yep.
And it's all about numbers. And as you get older, you're going to want more, and then they're going to say, no, we'll take the young guy who's going to take less. But there has to be some middle ground. And Floyd came up in a period in Disney history where the older guys were put on a pedestal. They weren't asked to leave. They were guys that were there teaching after the work day, saying, come on in, you want to learn how to draw this way, you want to learn how to draw that, you know, we're here for you. And these older people were really respected. Now there's this feeling of it's too much about dollars and cents. And, you know, hopefully through this documentary, through Floyd's satirical voice, that'll change. You know, corporate arts, as we always say, Eric and I will talk about, we'll say, Floyd's not a fireman. He doesn't have to be able to lift 300 pounds on his shoulder. If his brain works and he's funny and he's smart and he has great ideas, why can't he be a story artist working on the next Disney movie? There's no reason he shouldn't be able to.
Oh, exactly. Think about that, like the amount of experience that he has that he can pass on. I mean, there's not many artists left that could say, oh, I worked with Walt Disney. I worked at Hanna-Barbera, and then I went on to Pixar. I mean, he's seen all these waves of animation that he's been a part of. I mean, the fact that he did work on like films like Sleeping Beauty, where there was no shortcuts. Everything was by hand, the hard way, and the fact that he adapted to new technology and worked at Pixar and movies like Toy Story 2, you know, there's a wealth of experience there that younger generations can really learn from that has value.
Yeah. And even not just the level of experience, but his knowledge of cinema going back to the 30s. I mean, when you see some of the gags that he does, like Eric is saying, you know, he was working on Toy Story 2. You know, there's the Jurassic Park gag, which at the time was a little bit more modern. But then, you know, you go back and he did references to the old Beach Blanket Bingo movies. And, you know, movies of the 50s and 60s, like, he has this chest full of ideas that come from life experience, from cinema knowledge, that, like, the young folks, they don't maybe have a knowledge of beyond movies of 1980. And, you know, you need to be able to reference everything, and that's why a guy like Floyd is so important, especially as a story man, especially.
Yeah. That's one thing I really love listening to old radio dramas and old radio comedies, because the way they did things was so entirely different back then, and it's stuff to me that really still holds up. I mean, we still hear the Who's On First joke, the entire sketch, and we can still laugh hysterically at that.
I watch Groucho Marx and the Marx Brothers online all the time.
Yeah.
I laugh harder at that than I do at some of the contemporary stuff coming out now, so I agree with you 100%.
No, I hear you. One of my favorite movies is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yes.
Mixing them with Universal Monsters is just like the greatest thing ever.
Totally.
Yeah. So see, those older guys that know comedy, that where you it wasn't shock value like we do today. We try to shock people into laughing, but the guys who actually knew how to tell a joke because you could relate to it, and the gift of satire when done properly, to where even the person you're kind of maybe poking at could probably still laugh at it. That's impressive. I mean, to see the way like Floyd Norman, how he had his drawing of Walt and always looked like angry Walt because he's like, oh, he's got to go and do all this stuff. But to know that Walt looked at these pictures and laughed at it and says, oh, hey, you need to come into our storyboard meetings. It's like, that's impressive. It's like, you can make fun of Walt and Walt will laugh at it and say, you know what? You're good. Come here.
Yeah, no, he didn't. He's on the talent.
Yeah, that shows what the company was like back then, that it was small enough where Walt Disney could walk the halls and say, oh, this guy made fun of me really well. This guy's promotion, you know.
that's just you can't teach that in school. That's just something, you know, he's just got a raw talent there. And the cool thing is what I really like about this documentary is, I mean, this is a name I had not heard before. I think the first time I heard it was Paul Berry of Window to the Magic had mentioned something about the documentary coming up on Netflix on his Facebook page, and so I was like, what is this? So I went looking for it, and I'm like, oh, hey, look, there's this whole guy I've never heard of and all this stuff. Wow, look at this. And even sitting to watch it again, knowing all the things he did with Hanna-Barbera and the list of cartoons that he worked on, just that is mind-blowing. So how do you keep from geeking out when he's listing all these Hanna-Barbera cartoons that you probably grew up watching like I did?
Yeah, I love those cartoons, man. I mean, that's my childhood right there, watching Hanna-Barbera, man. And it's all shows Floyd worked on. And he's Josie and the Pussycats and Scooby-Doo. And it was so funny, as I'm geeking out and Michael's geeking out, but he's like, oh, Scooby-Doo is so stupid. That dog is so annoying. I'm like, I love that dog. And I love that sequence because Michael did an amazing job cutting that sequence, because it's show after show and you remember all of them, you know. And
also it's funny too, because he says, oh, I'll never be able to remember all of them, and then in one cut he remembers all of them. But the reality is, that wasn't an act, you know. That's not like Floyd is so humble. Like, if Floyd tells you, I don't think I can remember him, he means it. But the way that it comes off is almost like he didn't. And it was a whole planned routine, you know. It was like, all right, I don't know him, but here you go.
And to even have him just, you know, casually mention some of these, that, wow, like you said, it is like our childhood. And even starting off with Quickie Koala. On the documentary, I was just about, you know, I nearly hopped up off the couch. I was like, I love Quickie Koala, holy cow, you know, because that it's that whole era of when television animation became such a big thing with Hanna-Barbera that, you know, it just changed. It's what created to me Saturday morning cartoons. And to see somebody now who was involved with it and then to move into that cafe scene where you have all these guys that, you know, names you didn't know, but like these are the people that basically raised you on your cartoons. That's why I was telling my wife, you know, I was like, you know, if I could have been a fly on the wall in that room.
The real stories, right? I mean, from the guys who were actually there and the way they bust each other's chops. And I love how they talk about how sort of cheap. I think for Floyd, like actually from Disney, where you have like all the bells and whistles and a head of Barbera. It's like, no, you got to recycle drawings and do it fast and cheap, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, if you really love that stuff with the guys, actually one of the cool bonus features we have on our Blu-ray has an extended sequence with the guys at the cafe. So you get kind of more backstory on them, some more stuff that they worked on, and it's, again, very light, funny extended sequence. We Eric and I kept saying we were cutting it, like, oh, like, you know, these guys are so great, maybe they should kind of be the through line, you know, like almost like in Woody Allen's Broadway Danny Rose, where they're the Carnegie Deli and these guys, you know, that all work together, talking, and you keep coming back and forth. But the reality is like, you kind of have to earn it. It's one of those things where the payoff became better when you're kind of just like, it's Floyd's story, and you're hearing about all these different things, you know, all these different roles you could have in animation, and then finally you come together with these people that kind of embody every aspect of animation. Whereas if you just kept peppering them in, after a while it would actually kind of deflate it a little bit. So it was a very conscious choice to put them in that one segment. But for people that love it like yourself, on the Blu-ray you can have more fun with the guys.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sold. All right, that's all I needed. Okay, I'll go get it. I am there because I am enough of a cartoon junkie that especially I loved, because I had no idea that Fat Albert had started as a television special.
Yeah.
So that blew me away.
And there's almost no way to see it outside of going to the Paley Center. There's a copy at the Paley Center in New York and L.A., I believe. And the only other known copy belongs to Leo Sullivan, Floyd Norman's creative partner. And other than that, not even Bill Cosby or his company has a copy. Nobody even knows who the rights holder is.
Wow.
We contacted everybody in the industry, and they're like, we don't know it. And nobody knows who, not even the Paley Center. The Paley Center doesn't even know who owns it. So it's kind of this weird, like, did it exist? Because there's almost no copies. It's a strange phenomenon.
Yeah, it's this lost treasure, and yet there are people who remember seeing that when it originally aired and thought it was so cool. And without that, there would be no Fat Albert TV show, because it's that special that greenlit the show. So.
Yeah, so I started to wonder there, and the character designs were very, very different from the clips you showed. But I wondered, like, because I know Filmation did that later. So, I mean, did Floyd get to work a little bit with Filmation, or did they just kind of take from that point and move on? And, you know, I guess some of the people from Filmation must have been involved if they were the ones that carry over. But did you find out?
I don't know. Maybe you didn't. They didn't do they didn't do the one Floyd worked on. They didn't do the special. Mm-hmm. Filmation ended up doing the actual series. So they didn't use the same people.
And also with a few years apart, I think it was 2 to 3 years later that they did the Filmation version. But yeah, Derek's saying, I don't know if there was crossover of creatives. I don't know who went. I don't think Leo went. And I know Floyd didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those things you always have to wonder. It's like, oh, yeah, because I know Filmation started at that time. So it'd been kind of cool actually connected in there because there is actually a good Filmation connection in that you got to talk to Paul Dini, which some of his early work there, working on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe before he branched over to Batman. And it was really cool seeing him in there. Like, oh, that's what Paul Dini looks like. I have idolized everything he's written for years now.
Yeah, he's amazing. His work on the Batman anime series is so fantastic. Yeah. So it was great to interview for the movie, and he just had the best thing to say about Floyd, because he clearly, not only loves Floyd, but he loves that sort of the classic animation that Floyd was a part of, you know.
Yeah. You've got a lot of really good people to talk about Floyd in there that you can geek out about every name nearly, because, I mean, Sergio, and I never know how to say Argonés.
Aragonés.
But seeing him, I'm like, oh my gosh, Mad Magazine, Gru the Wanderer, and then talking to Richard Sherman, I mean, as a Disney fan, this is one of the ones I would probably not be able to focus on what I was trying to do, because I'm probably going to be like geeking out over everybody you talk to. I mean, Don Hahn, golly, and even I need to double check on who this one guy, and I didn't catch out his name. I just noticed that it said he had written Lilo and Stitch, were a co-writer on Lilo and Stitch, but then I think that was the same guy also that was listed as being a director, writer-director for How to Train Your Dragon, and it said Trilogy, which I'm like, oh, I mean, there's a third one?
They're putting the third one together now, but that's Dean, and I always mess up his last, I've known him since 2010, I still mess up his last name, so
Dean Dubois,
you know, but yeah, he really wrote, directed the How to Train Your Dragon movies and Lilo and Stitch, and there is a third one coming up, and he worked with Floyd on Mulan, which is great.
Yes.
And that was one of the things that Floyd was just tremendous at. I mean, we only referenced two, but there's many other folks. Floyd had such an eye for talent. So, you know, Gary Clouseau is in the movie, who co-directed Beauty and the Beast with Kirk Wise and numerous other great Disney movies, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Atlantis. And, you know, Floyd gave Gary his first job out of college and really, you know, boosted him up. And then Floyd, you know, went and worked with Dean Dubois on Mulan. And, you know, he knew that these guys, as, you know, in their early 20s were going to be huge. And, you know, he was there nurturing that talent. That's a gift to have that ability. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt, he is
mine. Yeah, it's definitely one of those unsung heroes to a lot of the outside, you know, because there's so many Disney legends that you hear their name, you don't really know who it is. But you guys really took the time now to find a Disney legend and find all these people that he's had an effect on, where I do know these names of the people he's had an effect on. And for that, I'm just totally geeking out watching this, like, oh my gosh, I know who that is. I love that movie that this person made. And oh my gosh, it's all because Floyd Norman has somehow impacted their life. So
he's the nexus of the universe.
Exactly.
I mean, he's worked with everybody. I remember it's in the documentary when he casually brought up working with Tex Avery. I was like, oh my god, Tex Avery, you know, or like you did the animated logo to Soul Train, really?
Yeah.
That, you know.
And I think that's something that you have to go in and then really focus on the fact that Floyd working at Disney is special enough on its own, but then he literally worked in the same room, in the story department, with Walt Disney. What I think a lot of people don't understand is they think, oh, well, if you worked at Walt Disney Productions, you would work with Walt. And the reality is, no. So Floyd was that one in a million to get that opportunity. So, you know, you always try to tell people, like, no, Floyd was very, you know, select few, and, you know, talk about cream rising to the top. I mean, his talents and his smarts got him there, for sure.
Yeah, and definitely his sense of humor.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine what it must be like for him to pitch boards to Walt Disney and have Walt go, yep, nope, not that one. Yeah, like, he talked about in the movie how scared he was, and it's true. Most people don't think of that. They probably think, oh, it's so exciting, but it's also got to be terrifying trying to impress Walt Disney with this stuff, you know?
Yeah, which does remind me, these little bits of animation throughout the film were just fantastic. Now, who worked on those?
We had about 10 or so animators from all around the world.
Wow.
And they all were very aware of Floyd. That was really the reason that they were all over it. And Eric and I sat down with a cut of the movie and said, let's pick around 25 to 30 sequences where we're either missing B-roll or we need to just, like, boost the humor of the sequence. And we always knew we were going to put animation, by the way, but it was just kind of like, how are we going to use it to kind of elevate the narrative? So we sat down, we picked our sequences that we both liked, and then we sent a list to Floyd along with the actual, like, 10-second segments of audio and picture where they would fall in the movie. And Floyd was great. In like a week's time, he did like 25 to 30 single sketches for us. And then that informed the animators both as a character design guide, but it also kind of informed the narrative that they would then do in these like 10 to 20 second long little animations. So the process was a lot of fun, and all these people, I mean, all these animators were great. They're all very up and coming, and all of them have very bright futures. They all did a great job.
Oh, yeah. They were really great and really funny. I loved it. It really did add a lot of fun to the film, to where it's not just, you know, documentaries can be very informative. You can sit there, I'm learning new things. But to have the bits of animation really helped add to the charm of the film, you know, other than the fact that Floyd himself seems to have just this really good, positive attitude about things, which is something that we really promote here at Neverland. And so combining that with the animation really just helped to tell his story. It was a wonderful choice to include that.
Well, it makes sense because he's a cartoonist and an animator, but also it's like a view into his head. So it's like the way Floyd sees these events of his life, because he sees everything as a cartoonist or as an animator. So it's great. It adds a lot of humor, but it also adds sort of insight into Floyd's, you know, thought process of while things are happening.
And we kept trying to figure out, because keep in mind, while Disney's archives run very deep with material, as Floyd always said to us, if you found storyboards from The Jungle Book in archives, he's like, I wouldn't know where my art began and Vance Geary's did. Like, you were trained to basically draw it all the same way.
Yeah.
So, you know, we kept saying, well, how do we guess, without having the exact archival sometimes of what Floyd did, how do we get Floyd as the artist in? And so by having these single gag images that Floyd drew, you know, inform the animation, you truly see that Floyd is in every animated segment. And so what's really cool, again, on our Blu-ray, is we have a featurette. This is actually my favorite featurette on there, where it's a side-by-side view of, you'll see Floyd's gag, and then it'll cross-dissolve into the animation that it informed. So you'll see all 25 to 30 back-to-back, and you really, when you see it side-by-side like that, you really realize, wow, these artists did their best job to make sure that it looks like Floyd animated them. they really did a great job.
Yeah, and I when watching the film and seeing, you know, after seeing some of the animated sequences, then it's watching Floyd draw and I start recognizing the style, I was like, oh, that's really cool. It almost looks like he animated the whole thing. That's brilliant. So, that was a nice touch. That was awesome. So what are you all going to do next? Or what are you working on now? Because I know it can be like a 3 to 4 year process making a documentary film. So you going to make another documentary? More narrative? Or?
Could be. You never know. I mean, there's so many great people to make movies about. You know, there's so many inspiring people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Eric and I have come together on an idea that we were fleshing out. So, you know, we'll see. And then also, I have a scripted suspense thriller coming out from Sony Screen Gems this year called Keep Watching. And it stars the former Disney star, ironically, Bella Thorne, and Chandler ribs from The Walking Dead. So that's coming up this year, and that'll be in theaters.
Awesome. All righty. So now people are probably going to want to get a copy of this Blu-ray for all these extra things. What's the best way to go and find a copy of this?
Super easy. You can just visit floydnormanmovie.com. And actually, we have a contest going on that is actually the second time we're doing this. If you buy a Blu-ray, and if you take a photo of yourself with the Blu-ray, post that photo online and hashtag it Floydering. Floydering is the combination of two words, Floyd and loitering. And it was a term that was created when Floyd got force retired and he didn't want to leave Disney. Someone said, you know, you're Floydering. So there's a lot of time on screen that we spend with Floyd Floydering, but you'll have your chance to Floyder with Floyd, because we're going to select one person at random from these posts online to be flown or taken to Burbank to have lunch with Floyd at the Disney lot and have a tour led by Floyd. We, as I said earlier, we awarded our first winner about 6 weeks ago, Tiffany Lipkuman from up in the Bay Area, and she had an incredible time. And Eric and I, our schedules were such that we were able to join her, and it was incredible. Just watching her joy was incredible. And Floyd was wonderful and set up a great tour of Walt's original office, which has been redone from archival photos using all the original desks, tchotchkes, you name it. And you can actually go online on all our different social media outlets on Facebook for Floyd Norman documentary. You can go and you can actually see video from her day and photos. So that could be you if you had the contest.
Oh, yes, yeah, that will really be me.
And I'm telling you, it was amazing. Like, he walked us around the animation building. He took us to Walt's office. And Floyd's telling her these stories. And we were there, too, telling her these stories about, like, firsthand stories even we hadn't heard before after years of making the movie. So it's really a unique, one-of-a-kind way to experience Disney with a Disney legend. You know, she left really inspired, and so did we. So it's fantastic.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. And I can attest to when you get a chance to hear from Disney legends and be in the same room and hear their stories, it is a wonderful thing. I got to do a thing up in Marceline this past summer where we had I can't remember the names of these three guys, but they were three guys that some of the original employees in Disneyland, and the original Tom Sawyer was there, and they had so many great stories to tell that it's – if you're a Disney fan, you are going to just sit there and soak it in like a sponge. So this sounds like a really good opportunity.
Was that at the Walt Disney Museum?
Huh? Yeah, the Hometown Museum in Marceline. Yes, I go up there every year.
That's wonderful. You guys, or not you, but that museum, they're actually going to begin carrying the Blu-ray starting next week for their 2017 series and season, I should say. And I think they're actually trying to bring Floyd out as well to do an in-person Q&A.
Oh, goodness. Okay, well, see, when that happens, I will be there.
Yeah, we're actually just talking to them now. So, yeah, that'll be sometime, I think, in April or May.
Oh, goodness. Okay, well, I am there. And if you get a chance to talk to Kate Mallins or Peter Whitehead, tell him Jeremy from the Neverland Podcast says hello.
Yes, we're talking to Peter, so there you go. I will extend a hello.
Yes, actually, last year at Planet Comic-Con, him and Kay came down, and I had a panel. We talked about Walt Disney's time at Marceline. It was so much fun. They're great people.
Oh, that's great, yeah. Very cool.
Oh, yes. So this year I'm going to do slightly different. We're going to talk about Walt Disney's time in Kansas City, but I'm not having them come down because they're more of a Marceline expert. So I got to find my own experts now.
That's cool.
That's definitely – I've been telling people that go to Marceline for years to come to Toon Fest, but there's a different around May and April. Keep an eye on this, because if Floyd Norman comes to town, you're going to want to come to Marceline and check it out. Because these talks are so great, and you hear so many good stories. And when you get into the presence of these legends, it's like this electric thing. You're like, oh my gosh, look at the things they've done, and you know, it's very exciting. So,
and And Floyd loves telling stories. He loves sharing his history, and he also was very kind about doing drawings for people, so you could score a nice drawing to
I'm there. If, in case I wasn't convinced already, I'm there, because that'd be awesome. So, oh my goodness. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show. This has been great fun, and I'm now like super excited to get my hands on this to watch the bonus features.
Nice.
Please do, yeah. The movie's had an extremely nice life over the last 8 months or so, and the Blu-ray definitely, if you've seen it online, Netflix or iTunes or anything like that, the Blu-ray definitely has stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else, so it's definitely one for fans.
Definitely.
And the artwork on... The artwork on the Blu-ray was done by Drew Struzan, who did all the Star Wars and Indiana Jones posters. So it's amazing artwork too.
I thought that looked like his style. When I was looking at this picture, it's like that kind of looks like Drew Struzan work and stuff. Because that was an awesome documentary,
by the way.
Wow!
Thank you very much, sir. I really appreciate that. But yeah, we were very lucky to have him do the artwork for us. So.
Yeah, because he's super talented
well
too.
With the Blu-ray.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you once again. This has been great.
Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having us.
Anytime. You guys get another good project like this, you can let me know.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPcast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/neverlandpodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Yay!
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty. That means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save